You're listening to OEA Grow, a member-led production of the Oregon Education Association and a proud member of the Labor Radio Podcast Network. OEA Grow is by members, for members. In Season 12, educators discuss the rural school experience with Tony Myers.
Welcome to another episode of OEA Grow. Today we're speaking with rural educators and we have Jessica today. Jessica, can you please introduce yourself and tell us what your position is?
Sure. I'm Jessica Breidinger and I am a social science instructor at Treasure Valley Community College in Ontario, Oregon. I've been teaching at TVCC for, going on 16 years now. I started with the college in disability services and did some adjunct teaching and then moved into a full-time position shortly after that. So I've been with the college for about 17 years, teaching full-time, just a little bit less than that.
Can you describe the rural community college experience to our listeners?
It's an intense experience. It is an intense experience. One of the things that we say at rural institutions quite often is we wear many hats, especially in rural areas where we have, you know, some experience of poverty, you know, economic downturn, that sort of thing. Resources are scarce and limited, and people are a resource. And so often we, you know, what we find is that we wear a lot of hats. And for me, my experience at the college has been one that has been marked by a lot of intense experiences, some on the good side, positive side, some on the more poignant and even tragic side. So I would describe it as intense.
I love that. I teach at a two-room schoolhouse, and so I completely understand the rural education experience, but it seems like whether you're a kindergarten teacher or a college professor in a rural setting, it's the many hats.
It is. And often people think of this idyllic, very bucolic kind of experience in the country, which there's a lot of that, right? But there's also that level of intensity when you are responsible for many of the social requisites that your students need, right? It's not like we have a million resources to offer students. Often it's us.
I love that, though, because you still want to provide the optimum college experience for these kids.
Absolutely.
This may be their last experience in public education, or it could just be a stepping stone as they go to a four-year degree, but to provide the best experience for them.
Yeah, and sometimes it's the first experience in public education as well, because we have students, rural students, that are sometimes homeschooled. And they come to college for the first time as a public education experience.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. Well, I bet you get a lot of those.
I've had some, yeah.
What are the benefits and challenges of attending a rural community college for students?
Yeah, so along those kind of same lines or themes that are threaded throughout the rural experience, one of the benefits is small class size. I guess you could look at that, you know, either way. You could look at it like, you know, if you've only ever lived in a rural environment, it's comforting, but it may not be the level of exposure that a student is ultimately seeking. The benefit is small class size, small student to instructor ratio within the classroom. Another interesting point that doesn't often get talked about is that if I were an instructor, I have a PhD, if I were an instructor at a university, quite a bit of my duty would probably be publish or perish doing a lot of research, that sort of thing. And many of those, certainly 100 and 200 level courses within my department would be taught by junior faculty members or even student teachers. So at rural community colleges, I'm teaching 100 and 200 level courses with a PhD and a wealth of experience within my field. So students get a lot of bang for their buck. Tuition is, we try to keep those costs down, tuition and fees. But, you know, the idea is at community college and at our college, for sure, students get an opportunity to interact with instructors who often have advanced degrees, and that many of them are industry professionals who may currently be working within the field and then teaching in an adjunct capacity, or people like me who had a career in social services and then transitioned into teaching.
So what is your average cost size?
For our live class environment, our limit is 30 students. And we often see courses that are significantly less than that. So our make number is 13. And so it's somewhere between, I would say, you know, 13 to 25. 30 max is a pretty full class for me. Many of my classes are distribution electives or, you know, required in that, in a particular career tech ed track, that sort of thing. And I'll see fuller classes there, but I have a lot of elective courses as well that do a pretty good job of filling up to, you know, somewhere around 25. I would say that's my average class size.
That's a great teacher-student ratio.
Yeah. Enough students to, you know, keep dialogue going and, you know, not feel like you've got crickets out there in your audience with students. And, you know, that small class size, when it's very small, it's often difficult to do a lot of the things that I like to do, which is, you know, group interaction and tabletop exercises and so forth. So it's a nice number, not too big, but not too small. It's that kind of Goldilocks spot, I think, for instruction.
I love that. What is one event that really stands out to you in your years as a rural community college teacher?
Oh, gosh. You know, there are a lot of those moments that stand out for me. And again, some of them really, really bright glimmers. And, you know, some of them pretty intense kind of stuff on the poignant or tragic side, but I'll focus on a glimmer. So one of the things with the small class sizes and a smaller institution is that we really get an opportunity to interact on that one-on-one level, first name basis with students and get to know them as instructors. It's not just a mass of students out there, in an amphitheater type, you know, setting like some of the college courses that I took. And when I was doing disability services, there was a period of time where I was teaching and doing disability services. And I had the opportunity to interact with students who experienced some extra barriers and challenges beyond the normal that we see at rural institutions. So students who experienced, intellectual and developmental delays and other things. We are an open access institution, meaning that students can come and this may sound harsh, but they have the right to fail. They have the right to make an attempt and they have a right to equitable experiences at college and a right to test their limits. So I had a student who I was working closely in my capacity of a disability services. I think we now call that something else, but at the time it was disability services. And the student experienced autism. I think we call that neurodiversity now as well, but these are things right back then, 15 years ago. We have a horse production program at our institution. And this student's goal was to learn how to break and train horses. And the student was rather frail, suffered some additional kind of physical ailments and health conditions. Our instructor was initially scared to death that the student was going to get trampled in the arena by the horses. There were some milestones and goals that we had to set for the student that were additional challenges beyond what other students experienced. So for instance, this was a tough cookie. So this student would mount up, you know, put the saddle on and, you know, pull the cinch strap and do all the things that the other students do and would be riding along with the horse, and the saddle would just kind of slip sideways and the student would end up underneath the horse. And, you know, the instructor was kind of, I don't know what we're going to do. You know, they can't.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, this is dangerous. What are the risks here? The student wanted to proceed and would just shake it off. And, you know, and it was very matter of fact about, you know, the singular purpose of this goal. We had to add some added goals in there and get some supplemental instruction and develop some methods for this student to learn to properly cinch up the belly, I guess, and I'm not even familiar with, you know, horsemanship terms, but, you know, the belly cinch on the horse so that the saddle was solid and would not move around. All the other students, that was not an issue, right? That was something that they had already learned to do. So we had a number of challenges like that. Now, because our institution is small, because that instructor had that one-on-one time and got to know this student and develop this rapport, they had conversations and I had conversations with the student and with the instructor. And we were able to work out a plan so that the student could acquire those additional kind of requisite skills and then move on. So it took a little bit longer. The student was with us, you know, maybe longer than the instructor had hoped, but was certainly longer. And the student made successful academic progress and graduated with their self-stated goals and declared degree. So it was glorious. It was nail-biting, hair-pulling, harrowing times and a lot of conversations, a lot of tears from the student. I had an experience one time where the student was just completely overwhelmed, burst through my doors. I was not in my office, burst through my doors. And my secretary said, "You have a student crouching underneath your desk. I just want to warn you when you go in." So just having an emotional meltdown because not because of these things that were happening, but because people were telling them that maybe possibly, you know, they are not going to make it through. And that was what the meltdown was about, because the student was just relentless in pursuit of goals. And you know, that reminds me of how persistence is such an important ingredient. Being gritty and being persistent is such an important ingredient in success for students. And this student is my number one kind of, you know, flashbulb memory about what it means to be gritty and really go after what you want.
I love that, because if that student can stick with it and be successful and knows that team of cheerleaders is behind them, they can do anything.
Yeah.
It probably gave them the confidence for all their other classes, knowing that there's people there to support, not just a face in the crowd.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, and it was the you know, that support network that really kind of, you know, kept things moving forward for the student.
I went to Blue Mountain Community College fresh out of high school. And I read a study back then that said that if you go to a community college, you have a higher success rate of finishing your college degree. Do you see any truth in that?
I do. In fact, I just had a very nice email at the end of fall term from a student who basically disclosed multiple losses within their family system over fall term, a death of a grandparent, and still grieving over the loss of their child's father and some other things that were not at all mentioned to me during the term. But the note was one that said, hey, I just want to let you know how much I appreciate you not giving up on me. And that, you know, I had contemplated some dark, even darker things beyond just quitting school at times. These are often things that students don't necessarily share with us, but because, you know, I have had that personal connection with so many students, I see students as human beings first. In a rural community, you see these folks outside of what you do every day at work. So, you know, you may see them in church, you see them, you know, somebody's second cousin is related to somebody that, you know, you're close to. You see them at the grocery store and hope that they're not going to hold you up to ask about homework. You know, these kinds of things, you understand as a rural right? But I think that affords us some additional level of empathy and connection. And so as I sat there, this was a fully online course, right? An asynchronous course where the student is simply a name and a short introduction in a discussion board. And I thought to myself, I took a deep breath and I thought to myself, I sure am glad that I stuck to my principles and that I have sort of a guiding set of values for kindness and empathy with students. You know, that piece is always at the forefront of my mind because we are a small community. And because these are people that I have learned, you know, over time, I'm going to run into out there in the larger world. So this isn't just, you know, the generic student faces out there in the crowd for me. So yeah, I find that kind of connection and that level of intimacy really within our environment can be very, very helpful to a student's success. If that environment is not a safe environment that holds space for students, I think that that intimacy then and that closeness could, you know, create a measure of negativity beyond what you would see maybe in a different environment as well, because it's going to be a more direct sort of rejection or oversight, right? Than if you've got a classroom of 300 students, you don't ever expect that your instructor is going to know who you are unless you make a point of it. But in my environment, every student expects that I'm going to know a little bit about them. And so, you know, it's up to me to show up in the right ways. But I think that that's a quality, you know, that's a key ingredient to success. And that's what the research says as well. It's our, you know, intensive advising and immersive contact with students that really, you know, keeps them motivated to move forward and persist term to term and to finish their goals.
I love the common theme on the different episodes that I've done, the different people I've talked to. Everybody says the community is the core foundation, the tight knit family. You'll see them at the grocery store. You'll see them at church, and just developing that, we need interaction with people. Yeah. Humans thrive on that. And so to be able to have that just naturally in our environment, I think building that connection is so important.
Definitely. And I think the pandemic really put a pin in that for us, didn't it? It really showed us that, yeah, this is the real of what's needed. It's the essential ingredient, because we had all the technology, we had all the skills, we had all the other stuff. And what was missing was that human connection and being together in that community. It's really a very, I think, reaffirming experience for me anyway.
Are you still seeing effects from the pandemic of this lack of social interaction? Like in elementary school, I'm still seeing that as the kids go through. Are you still seeing that?
Yeah. And, you know, having 15 years as an instructor in social science on the books, you know, I'm a fly on the wall when it comes to people and, you know, and trying to understand people. And I've seen a lot of changes over time. What I'm seeing now are young students coming through who were students who may have been freshman, sophomore, junior, senior during the pandemic years. And, you know, that coupled with, I always talk about the smart, you know, the smartphone. The phone is smart, but what is it doing to us? We need to be aware that, you know, technology, I say in my classroom, is a tool. Don't let it make a tool of you.
I agree.
You know, and so, but what I'm seeing is some challenges in those areas because of what the pandemic did. So everybody's heads down and into their devices. They've got some real dopamine reward system stuff going on with those devices. I mean, clearly it's a battle for me in the classroom to get students to just put those things down. And I understand the struggle. And then, you know, with that additional isolation, the lack of those social experiences, those lived moments, I can't imagine what it would have been like had my junior and, you know, my freshman and sophomore year been locked down. I thought that the amount of restriction I was on for, you know, for a kid who, you know, was a little bit incorrigible. I can only imagine what it would have been like to not have dances, to not have, you know, going to the movies with friends, to not have, you know, and technology was right there to say, you know, ooh, keep your nose down over here in this app or this, you know, this thing. And so, yeah, I'm noticing those challenges. We had this debate for a while in higher ed last year about changing the title of office hours to student hangout time, because students, who I had to remind folks at my institution, are adults, even though they may not feel fully ready and they're in transition, they are adults till the law changes, right? That no, we're not doing them a favor by changing it to faculty hangout time. But the idea that came down through administration and from, you know, other discussions was students are intimidated by that office hours thing. They're afraid to approach you during that time. Well, my gosh, if they're afraid to approach me, I don't need to change up the title to hangout time. I need to encourage them to be brave,
right.
You know, to be
gritty for themselves.
Yeah. We talk, you know, we spend all this time talking about being gritty. And then, you know, I was just shaking my head. It was like, here we talk about students being gritty and over here, you want to change it to hangout time because it's cozier or comfy feely. And no.
Your bosses are going to have a hangout time.
Yeah. Yeah. I need to go.
That's what we're preparing them for.
We're preparing them for the world of work and the larger world. And it's not about hangout time when you need to confront an issue or have a serious discussion. And so, you know, certainly come hang out during office hours if you want to, but it's office hours. So,
exactly,
yeah, so yeah, those are some of the challenges I think the institution is struggling with. And then students are struggling with as well. That whole, how do I approach and interact with people? How do I do social environment?
I think this is going to be a time that is studied in the future. They're going to look back and see how things changed and how people interacted differently and what it did.
Yeah, I agree. I'm really fascinated by it.
Me too. Is there anything you haven't shared yet that you want listeners to know?
Well, a couple of things. So TVCC has a really unique experience for students. We have on-campus housing, which is really, really great. So we have a number of different delivery methods for our courses. So we have fully online courses and we're gaining some momentum in online programs. We're not quite there yet with having a bunch of fully online programs, but some. We have a lot of online classes. We have a lot of virtual classes. We've done some high flex type courses and we're still looking at those. But we also have, you know, the traditionally structured live courses. And we have students from all age groups and all walks of life that come to TVCC. We have athletics and we have student athletes. And we, like I say, we have the dorms, which is kind of a reminds me of the junior colleges you know, back when I was a kid. So we have kind of a junior college experience for students. And that's pretty unique. I was, in prepping for this discussion, I was looking over some of the demographics across the nation. And only about 28% of community colleges in the U.S. have on-campus housing. So we're kind of unique in that way. And I believe there are about 233 community colleges within the United States, which I thought was kind of a small number.
For all the benefits it holds.
Yeah. You know, I'd have to dig a little bit deeper. There may be somebody else, one of your listeners maybe, that knows more than me, and I don't necessarily always trust the interwebs. But, you know, with some Googling, that, you know, that number was a number that was kind of tossed around. I thought, I want to get back to that and look maybe a little bit further into that and see. We do offer a really, unique experience in that regard. And then, you know, certainly lots of professional technical programs and the traditional transfer programs, and then, you know, self-improvement and community ed and all that great stuff. TVCC is really a fantastic institution to be a part of. And I'm really excited to be a part of it.
I do like how you mentioned students of all ages. It's a lot less intimidating to go to a community college if you're an older student and just stepping back into the education world. And I love that about the community college.
Yeah, I do as well. I had an 80-year-old student in a human sexuality class just for self-improvement. She sat in the front row. It was delightful. It was delightful. I loved it. I'll never forget it.
It's so easy for those young students too, your 18, 25-year-olds, to have that experience.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's so cool. Do you have any resources you'd like to share with the listeners?
Three resources that I think are really, really helpful. I teach mindfulness, meditation, and stress management at the college. And a book, 10th Anniversary Edition, Wherever You Go, There You Are by Jon Kabat-Zinn, Mindful Meditation in Everyday Life. This is such an important part, I think, of stress management and maybe navigating some of that social tension or the stressors or anxieties, especially with students as we, you know, come out of that pandemic era. And, you know, we have students dealing with test anxiety and students dealing with social anxiety and just the generalized anxiety about college. This is a fantastic book. It's a great resource for us as teachers and instructors, but also a great thing for students. Teaching kids to meditate very early on has such a calming and grounding effect. So 10 out of 10, highly recommend this one for sure.
I see there's a lot of tabs in it, so I can tell it's all up.
A lot of tabs. I drag it to class and, you know, sometimes do exercises and have discussions. A couple of other resources for educators. The Slow Professor. I love this one. This was part of a reading group that Phil Mahaffey, our humanities and English instructor, who's now retired, very beloved instructor at our institution, did a reading circle for faculty with this book. And it's challenging the culture of speed in the academy. And it's really, it's a tiny little book, but it's really about slowing down to experience those those moments with students looking at time. You know, I tell my students there's no such thing as time management because time marches on. There's only self-management. So we need to be good stewards of our time, but we also need to be able to stop and smell the roses and let the lesson stand, right? And have maybe some of that percolation or marination or whatever you want to call it, right? With the lessons. I was trained as a Montessori school instructor in my early college experience. And I love the Montessori teaching method because it really resonates with this, that whole idea of slowing down and meeting your students where they're at and taking those opportunities to maybe get off track and sink deeper into something that the class is going towards, right? Rather than just having to, you know, march through everything in such a structured way. So I love this one. And then the very last one, Small Teaching, James M. Lang, Small Teaching. This one is wonderful because it also expands on that concept of lived experience and lived moments. So within the classroom, and then just as well as educators and mentors, how do we really squeeze all the juice out of that relationship that we have with our students? And sometimes coming alongside them or coming around, you know, from an obscure angle is what really helps the lesson sink in. After reading this book, when I was doing disability services, I had a student who experienced severe ADD, ADHD, and wanted to be an elementary school teacher, was unsure whether they would ever be able to make it through math. This was a student who was a wrestler, got permission to come to, very athletic, got permission to come to my office to take math exams, and would drive through Dutch Brothers and get a large coffee because that would calm the nervous system down. Yes. Found that large coffee and come in and would look at a math problem and start to panic or get distracted, and then would do some one-handed push-ups, brought his jump rope and would, you know, do some jump roping and then get back to, you know, back to the problem, and really needed that physical kinesthetic experience in order to be successful with concentrating on his math. And he also was a student who made it through. So, you know, I like that idea.
He understands the out of the box students.
Absolutely. Yeah. And actually ended up, I've heard from him, this is the other really cool thing about, you know, rural community colleges, students often circle back around. So you get to, you know, hear the success stories. He actually went on to get a master's degree and works with special ed population. So.
Oh, that's so amazing.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, he was a student that didn't know if he would make it at all, didn't know, you know, whether he had the ability to focus and concentrate, really, really struggled with reading, but he made it through.
But those are the teachers that we need to understand and that students can relate to.
Yeah. Yeah. We do. And even if they continue to struggle in some of those ways and, you know, this is the whole meaning of, you know, equity and inclusion, that it doesn't stop when folks leave the classroom,
right?
You know, that it's about the whole world being structured that way. And so, I love Higher Ed for that reason.
So cool.
Well,
thank you so much for meeting with me today.
Thank you.
And hope you have a great day.
You as well. Thanks so much.
For more OEA professional learning opportunities, visit grow.oregoned.org.